I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Senator Jerry Ortiz y Pino, State Senator of New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Good morning. So you have introduced Senate Joint Resolution 5, which would place a constitutional amendment that would be voted on by New Mexicans. And here's what it says. Health care is a fundamental right that is an essential safeguard of human life and dignity, and the state shall ensure that every resident is able to realize this by establishing a comprehensive system of quality health care that is accessible to each resident on an equitable basis, regardless of ability to pay. That's huge. How would that affect the way New Mexico's government deals with health care?
Well, the first thing it would do would be to say that the state would be responsible for somehow providing a system of care for every New Mexican. It doesn't say what type of care. It doesn't say it has to be a single payer, or it has to be public clinics available everywhere, or it has to be some kind of insurance program. It would simply be a method of some sort that would be available to all New Mexicans. And so that's the essence of the measure. It would be an important step in establishing just how serious an issue this is for all New Mexicans, and of how basic a right this is. I think the majority of New Mexicans believe that the state does have such a responsibility. First of all, right now, 75% of all health care in the state is paid for by the government. So that's essentially the system we're moving toward. What this would do would be to make sure we don't leave out groups, that we don't have gaps, that we don't have the uninsured who have to go to emergency rooms and cost all the rest of us a great deal of money to provide for their most basic care.
Who's falling through the cracks now?
Well, I think there's basically three groups. One is working poor who work for an employer who doesn't provide health care as a benefit to their employees. And that's probably the largest pool. The second group are kids who grow up in families that, for whatever reason, aren't eligible or haven't taken advantage of public programs, and also who don't have a method of paying for some kind of insurance. Our reliance on insurance means both of those two groups are essentially left out of access to health care for the most part. Then there's the third group, which I would call the people who aren't eligible by virtue of their status. That is, they're from another country and they're working here. They're from an Indian tribe and they're not living they're from a tribe and they're living off their reservation. So they're far away from home, and so they're not eligible to get that care. And those would be basically the three groups: the ones that by virtue of their status aren't eligible, the ones that are unable to afford insurance, and those that are working for an employer who can't pay for or who doesn't provide that insurance.
In light of this amendment, which may pass and then will be put before the voters, how do you think about New Mexico's future in relation to the Affordable Health Care Act that Obama signed?
Well, when the whole debate over national health care was going on, we were very optimistic that there would be provision in it that would leave nobody uncovered. And it does cover many, many million new enrollees. But because it relies on insurance and that mechanism, there are still these same three groups that aren't going to be able to access it. And so this would be a way of making sure that all of these lives are covered by some kind of health program. Now, it would be up to us, and it puts the burden back on the legislative shoulders to figure out how we want to do that in New Mexico.
How bad is the situation in New Mexico? I was reading that almost a quarter of New Mexicans are uninsured?
That's right. That's absolutely right. And now with the Affordable Health Care Act, that will drop. But there will still be, some estimates are as high as 200,000 people that are living and working here or living and going to school here and who still will not be able to access health care. that's a huge burden for the rest of us. It shifts the cost of their care. We're paying for it anyway because they wait until they're real sick instead of dealing with things early on. And then when they do get care, they wind up largely in emergency rooms of hospitals, getting care that's not the most appropriate level of care for them. And so, and that they're not paying for, and that the rest of us pay for by having our bills increased. So, I think it's a major problem that the Affordable Health Care Act helps solve, but doesn't get us all the way there. This would say the state would still have to figure out some way of getting us there, of covering everybody with some kind of health program.
It seems, and I don't know who's done the math on this, but it seems that when you cover everybody, there's an initial expenditure, but there's also a huge savings of people not getting sick because they're getting checkups and they're getting little problems solved before they advance. Is that true?
You're absolutely correct in that. And there's been a study. We've had two studies, in fact. There was about 10 years ago, there was a study in New Mexico, something called, by a group called the Lewin Organization, a healthcare consulting firm. And they did a cost-benefit analysis of what a single-payer plan would cost New Mexicans. And then that was repeated 3 years ago by a group called the Mathematica Organization that spent a full year studying three different systems. What we have now, and if, you know, carrying it forward for 10 years, what would that cost? Some kind of insurance program and carrying that forward for 10 years, or a universal care plan that would cover everybody. And not surprisingly, because, we know that we spend in this country twice as much as any other country on health care per capita, and yet we don't have as good outcomes as other countries do. So not surprisingly, those studies both confirmed that the cheapest way of approaching the health care provision issue is to cover everyone and to cover them in a way that makes care accessible and that intervenes at the earliest time so that you're dealing with things, as you said, before they become serious.
I think it's one of those cases where there is a felicitous match between saving money and doing what is the humanitarian thing, which is allowing people to live in health.
That's right. Now here's the dilemma. Because you absolutely, you said it so well. But the dilemma and the reason we don't do it, you say, well, why don't we do that? It's the cheapest way to go. It's also the most humane way to go, and it's the fairest way to go. We don't do it because we've somehow slipped into a medicine as business model. And you don't, because it's the cheapest way to go, there's not as much money to be made in that approach. And that's the opposition that we run into. People who are making a great deal of money from our current hodgepodge system do not want to see us come up with the least expensive, best approach because they wouldn't be able to make as much money off. And it just becomes a very simple thing of, everybody's for economies in government. Just don't economize on my payroll. Don't economize on my profit margin. Don't economize on my contract. So that's what we've run into repeatedly, is that the insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, the hospital corporations, the health management organizations that are doing incredibly well. Their stocks are all moving up on the stock exchange. Their value is increasing every day because these are such lucrative practices. They're lucrative precisely because they don't cover everybody. They're costing us money as a result.
It's yet another example of privatized profits and socialized losses that we
exactly.
see all
That's
over
right.
the place.
We have socialism when it comes to the losses and capitalism when it comes to the profits. You absolutely covered it.
I think it's important to talk about the actual problems that are caused in our society by not having good health care. For example, how would it affect our schools if children had health care? What kind of problems are we seeing in schools by kids who are not getting health care?
Well, that raises the other issue totally related to that is, what is health care? Because lot of the school-based health centers are finding that they're dealing increasingly with mental health or drug abuse or family planning, reproductive health kind of issues. You know, they're not just giving shots and distributing aspirins or, you know, medicines that the kids have prescriptions for. They really are dealing with some of the emotional consequences of disturbed family life or other problems in the household. And so that, I think, it affects the way they're able to learn. It lowers their ability to benefit from their education. But you see the same thing in the workplace. We have a great many workers who wind up less productive than they would otherwise be, simply because they're dealing with their children's health problems or their own health problems, or they're worried and so they're preoccupied, and it becomes a great weight on our entire society when we're not able to deal with these problems in the most effective and least expensive way possible.
There's also a kind of funny irony here. On the one hand, the people who benefit from the system want to make money. On the other hand, if you think about what's best in terms of making our state, or if we think on a national level, making our country competitive, you have a lot better chance of having a really strong and intelligent and competitive workforce if they're healthy.
Exactly. Well, and you know, then that gets into not just their individual productivity, but the overall efficiency of our manufacturing system, for example, that is bogged down and is non-competitive for you know, a variety of reasons. One of which is that when we I heard this number associated with General Motors before their reorganization, but I think it probably still holds true. The cost of a General Motors produced car is $1,200 to $1,500 more expensive. It costs more to produce a General Motors car solely to the insurance, the health insurance that the corporation pays for the workers. Whereas in other countries, the government provides health care, and so the corporation can manufacture the car. All other things being equal, it would still cost $1,200 to $1,500 less to manufacture a car in Japan or Taiwan or Korea or Germany or France or England than in the U.S. simply because of healthcare. But we're not as competitive as we could be otherwise because we're not dealing with this in a realistic fashion.
And the thing is that these other countries have an interest in making healthcare as low priced as it can possibly be, because there is no profit motive. We're the only nation that has a for-profit healthcare system. Is that right?
I think we are the only one that relies exclusively on it. I think there are other countries that allow for-profit medicine systems to operate in parallel to a government-provided system.
Okay,
but,
right.
You know, there's so much misinformation about government-provided health systems. We had the first hearing on our amendment in the Rules Committee last week, and we had great support there and it passed. But there were several that voted against it because they thought, and they went on at great lengths about how they've heard horror stories about Canada, and about how in Canada, where this is an established basic right, you can't get health care if you're over 65. We're standing there scratching our heads, looking at each other, saying, what are they talking about? And that's in no way an accurate portrayal of what goes on in Canada or anywhere else where there's universal health coverage for the citizens. But that's some of the misinformation. And we continue to wear blinders as a nation about what the reality is for people in other parts of the world. They have every bit as high-quality health care as our most expensive health care in this country is, and yet they have basic health care for everyone. There's no need to make it an either-or situation.
We're talking to State Senator Ortizi Pino from District 12 in Bernalillo. So if this resolution passed and then the voters voted in favor of it, what would happen next?
Well, then I think it would become a responsibility of the state legislature to figure out a way to provide coverage for everybody. And we have some pretty simple ways of doing that. There is a bill in front of the legislature this year, as there has been every year for the last 15 years that I'm aware of, that would establish something called the Health Security Act. That would be one way of doing this. There is also just simply the possibility of using the new Affordable Care Act health insurance exchange and beefing that up so that it would provide health care services for everybody in the state through community clinics or through individual primary care doctors operating in rural areas out of their own offices or whatever. And if they had a regular way of getting reimbursed for what they were doing, then we might see a lot more medical professionals moving into the rural areas. But I think the main thing to focus on is that it probably would require us to totally redo our healthcare delivery system in a way in which we don't rely just on the highly skilled physician to do everything, but we begin using a whole variety of paraprofessional and other skill levels to do much of the treatment. And that would be how we would accomplish it, I think. We would have to put together something. It doesn't necessarily mean we'd be spending more money. I think we'd probably, in the long run, be spending less money.
I think that's something that it's really worth contemplating for people when they think about it costing less money to provide more care, and that that's not an impossibility. On the other hand, it's actually how it works when you run the numbers.
That's right.
And it's okay. So when you think about New Mexico, big state, geographically low population. How would we bring, we've got some urban areas, we've got a lot of rural areas, we've got a lot of poor areas. How would we bring, do you think, or what are some models of how we would bring medicine to the most underserved areas of the state? In other words, would the model be based on public schools, police and fire departments? How do you think of it?
Well, we're going to have a chance to see that. I hope we have a chance. There's a bill in front of us this year that calls for a pilot program to develop an affordable care organization, not affordable care, accountable care organization somewhere in the state. And I think the one that lends itself to it is that Booth Hill part of the state down in Lordsburg, Silver City, Deming part of the state, where there is already in place a network of clinics that could be utilized, and in which you would simply begin saying all the residents of these three rural counties are automatically enrolled in this accountable care health organization. And they would all then have access to whatever health care services they wanted through that organization. That organization would get a certain amount of money per month to make sure that everybody in those three counties stays healthy. And that money then would go to provide the whole spectrum of health care resources, clinics, home visits, individual doctor's office, hospital care. Everything would be the responsibility of that organization. So they would have a real incentive to make sure that people get treatment early on before their care becomes terribly expensive. But also they would have responsibility to make sure that people do things to change their lifestyle. Much of our health care costs are simply consequences of people making bad personal choices. Not eating properly, smoking, drinking, working too long, not getting enough rest, not getting care early on in the development of a health problem. So that's the kind of thing that doesn't have to be done by a doctor. It could be done by community health workers. Promotoras is the Spanish word that we use for that, or health educators. It could include school-based clinics for the kids. Could include programs in public housing facilities. Wherever there are people who need these resources, they could be provided. That's the kind of more integrated and coherent system that I think we're going to need to see developed, rather than simply have each individual going in to see, make a choice of one doctor, and then getting referred to a specialist a few weeks later, and then to a third specialist a couple months later, and then being admitted to a hospital for surgery. We can head a lot of that off. We can spread the same dollars over many more people and get much better outcomes.
It's interesting because this goes along with a lot of other things that we talk about on this program, like healthy eating and organic and sustainable farming. And so there's a whole set of movements that kind of intersect with one another.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for talking about these very important issues.